welcome to the latest episode of The Global Chatter. Wait a minute. That's not the show we're on. What show are we on? Chris, what show are we on?
Oh,
we're on Diesel and Clooney, right?
Yeah,
is that your show?
That's the one. Make it sound
okay,
good.
Okay. Welcome to the latest episode of Diesel and Clooney with special guest star, me, Amanda Bates, and I'm here taking over the show this episode, as you can hear them laughing in the background.
I mean, a bunch of listeners just breathed a sigh of relief. They were like, oh, thank goodness, some quality has come to this podcast, finally.
Yeah, and the quality just went through the roof because, Amanda, you are our very first repeat guest, second time on the show, and you're the very first guest to self-describe themselves as a star. So we escalated the caliber of this show. Yeah,
new year, new year, new levels, new goals, new
stars,
star quality,
new star quality. Welcome.
Oh, we're very glad you all joined us. I'm super excited to be a guest on my own show. This is very exciting.
Oh yeah. A guest star.
Can I say something really funny though?
Oh please.
No, truly, the Global Chatter is a podcast. It is mine. You should listen to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not that I'm plugging.
Please go there now.
But I am plugging. But here's the thing. On our very last episode last season, my editor flipped it and interviewed me on my own show.
Ooh.
And there's nothing weirder than having someone, you give them the reins,
right?
And you're on your own show going, so this is what it's like for everybody else who comes on.
Well,
our editor never does stuff like that.
No, our editor is the worst.
Yeah, we need to talk to our editor.
The worst.
Wait, isn't the editor Chris?
Oh,
Chris.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the worst. Like
he's the worst.
I am the worst. The worst. You know what, though? But I mean well, so that counts for something, right? That counts
absolutely.
For something.
Yeah. It does. It always has. Yeah.
Thank goodness. No, we're so glad that Amanda is back with us. And in our pre-production meeting, basically Amanda wrote the show. Like
she did.
You know, Jerry and I had so much planned, but we scratched the whole agenda. We were like, no, Amanda's ideas are better. Because I mean, it's not just
right
as our editor terrible, but our team of writers also pretty terrible.
Yep.
Pretty terrible, really. Thank goodness Amanda's here.
We just hired Amanda Bates as our editor and writer for this show. For this show, the
sequel. No pressure. So if you don't like this episode, feel free to not write me because I will not respond. Let me say this in all seriousness. I'm very excited to be here. I really do listen to this show, contrary to popular belief and jokes.
50% of our listeners.
Contrary to popular people.
And I do love coming on here because I love listening because I know I'm going to laugh. And there are nuggets of wisdom.
Ooh, we're all about the wisdom nuggets.
There are nuggets of wisdom that show up throughout.
Despite our best efforts.
Right. Like Easter eggs, you just sort of find them while you're looking.
Wisdom droppings.
And so I am so happy to be here. And I think that today's episode is going to be quite entertaining. Only because of what I've
got. Here's the big question, though. Is it going to be better than the first one?
Ooh.
This is our first sequel.
Yeah,
huh?
And that's the thing about sequels. I know Jerry stole my thunder. I was working.
Oh, did I enter the segue?
I did. I was.
Name, though.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Let me back up and try it again.
I was gonna work so hard to segue.
I've learned so much.
You've already told the listeners what the episode's about. Don't worry. I will segue us elsewhere into topics that we didn't even think of. So don't worry. I got more segues coming.
Well, you know, Chris, it reminds me of movies. I'm sorry, I can't do it. I tried to naturally go with the segue, but the segue's all yours, man. Take us there, Chris.
Well, Jerry, you know, sometimes I do get taken places, and sometimes I get taken to places that I've already been. You know, it's like a little return journey. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the return journey even brings back familiar characters. Maybe that's some of the comfort, is the familiar characters, but maybe the plot is a little bit different. And it's hard, Jerry. It's hard sometimes not to evaluate that repeat performance, that new set of circumstances, harshly. And so I would say maybe sometimes we've got to think about the sequels in life, be they movies or moves or even food. I mean, we talked a lot about food in the last Amanda Bates episode, right. and sometimes the sequel for food is not that great. I mean, I have legit returned to the Olive Garden sometimes, and I've been ready for that Zuppa Toscana, and I get back and it's a little watery on the return one, and I think, what has happened? Why is it watery this time? And then I go storming into the kitchen and I scream at them in Italian, and they don't respond because no one's actually Italian working in the Olive Garden. So they don't know what I'm talking about. Or it could be that my Italian grammar is absolutely atrocious. That's more likely the problem. I'm just kidding. I would never raise my voice in an Olive Garden. I'm not a monster. I'm not a monster.
A Hardee's maybe, but an Olive Garden. I'm just saying.
And regardless of really any of that, I think my big takeaway from that segue is that when you get Chris and Amanda together, it takes less than 6 minutes to get back to the Olive Garden. That's what we're going to talk about.
Sponsorship. We're recording
it on an Olive Garden right now. That's the viewers. The viewers and listeners, well, there are no viewers, but the listeners don't know is that we're all actually in Olive Garden spread across the United States.
Legit.
You're going to hear the occasional, and that's just me working on my Zuppa Toscana in between witty quips.
I'm just here for the breadsticks.
Oh my God. Breadsticks are so good.
Who isn't?
Oh, I love the breadsticks.
Yeah. And you know what's great about breadsticks, Jerry? They're just an ongoing sequel. That franchise will never end, Jerry. Wow. You finish a breadstick, and another one comes. And you finish that one, and another one comes. It's like the Fast and the Furious in that there's just more than you think there should be.
Yep.
I do have a question. So I've never seen the Fast and the Furious.
Okay.
Well, I starred in them. So, I mean, this is Diesel and Clooney.
You're right.
That's right. You're the star of all of them.
Star.
So here's my question. I would assume we're on 7, 8, 9, whatever, 10.
Yeah, it's 8 or 9, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, is there...
I've been busy.
Do the expectations change? Like, where do expectations go when you've seen... You know, like
this is my take. So as a family, we watched them all like late last year because the new one was coming out. My kids wanted to go see it. And I was like, I've never seen any of these. I don't even know the story. I feel like we need to watch them. And so we kind of binged them over the course of a week. This was my take, was I sat through the first one, maybe the first three, and just mocked just incessantly. Okay. They made me so angry.
Listen, Jerry, I am trying. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
I am trying.
Let me just say this, Chris. You're my favorite Diesel. that's how I would state it. But they were just so bad. But then it was just like you could tell they made money off of them because the budget just increased and increased and increased. And they just kept turning up the volume on everything until it got to the point that was like, okay, that you just blew out the speakers and there's nowhere to go, but wait, you'll find a place to go. Like, you will continue to raise the roof on this. And it was just entertaining. It's a good example from strictly an entertainment value. I like, forget the plot, forget any of the things that make a good story, right? We can debate about that all day long, but just from an entertainment perspective, I feel like the Fast and Furious is a great example of one that as you come back and keep coming back, it just gets better and better.
Mm. Well, can I ask you then a follow-up question? Because so I'm you're talking about it and I'm thinking about, okay, we've all traveled extensively. Mm. And I know this can be a challenge for people. Have either of you been to places where you were kind of there before the tourists got there?
Then it
changed, like the dynamics changed, right?
Yes.
Because I'm hearing this about parts of Mexico with some of my Black expats. And so I'm really curious, like, if there's anywhere you can remember, like, before a major shift, and then now it's like, yeah, it doesn't look like what it did in 1980 or 1990 or early 2000s or whatever.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I think for me, and this is funny because on our last episode, we talked about Italy quite a bit. So I'm bringing it back. But Italy is, as I've mentioned on the previous episode, one of the most strangely consistent things in my life. I've gone to Italy most summers for a camp. Been to Italy a lot. And when I was a kid, this camp that I went to as a participant, and then I used to go as a volunteer, then I went as camp staff, and then I went as a speaker, so I'm familiar. And we used to take the kids to Cinque Terre, and Cinque Terre has always been a thing. Cinque Terre is these five little towns kind of carved out of the side of a hilly range on the western side of Italy. And they all have lovely names. There's Manarola and Vernazza. And the funny thing is, I don't actually know their names that well because we just do it by number. We're like, oh, the best pizza is at City 5. The nicest beach is at City 2. All this kind of stuff. Yeah. And it's always been a bit of a tourist place. But just in the oh my, I guess it has almost been, well, I guess 2 decades. In the 2 decades that I have been regularly going to Cinque Terre, it went from a quaint kind of place that there were visitors, and there were a lot of local visitors too. Italians go there quite a bit, to now it is so packed that I don't even look forward to it almost. I feel bad saying that, but it's just so all it took was one or two travel writers to say, oh, it's this hidden gem, and it is no longer hidden, and it's working on tarnishing gem as well. So it's it's much dirtier, and it's just so crowded now that it's unbelievable. So it's kind of a sad thing. And it made me think very selfishly. I was like, oh man, I want to, all the other places that I really like to visit, I don't want to tell anyone about them because I don't want to Cinque Terre all the lovely places in my life. That's right. It's so overrun that it's now a verb. Now when you overrun a place with tourists, you Cinque Terre.
Don't Cinque Terre this place.
Oh, right. Yeah. Don't Cinque Terre this place. Don't. So I do. Now I'm very selective with who I tell, you know, about the hidden gems. Keep them hidden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about you, Amanda? You got some hidden gems?
You know, not so much. I think for me, they're just places, to Chris's point, that I mean, I have this love-hate relationship with travel writing, right? Mm-hmm. On one hand, it's like you can expose people to this place that they've never seen and cultures and the richness of it. But then I think we live in such an age of social media that first and foremost, people want to put it on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And once a gorgeous place lands on Instagram or TikTok, people are going to try and get there. I was actually on, like many people, on TikTok quite a bit the last year. TikTok is actually hilarious to waste time, but that's neither here nor there. And there's this TikToker I follow, and he was putting up these beautiful locations in the world, but he wouldn't tell you where they were. And there was one that was so gorgeous. And everyone's like, I've got to see that shot for myself. And I think it's somewhere in Central Europe. I want to say actually maybe it's more like Switzerland. But he wouldn't tell anybody where it is because he knew that everybody would try to. I don't want you here. And so you were talking about that movie. And I was just thinking to myself, well, a lot of this is driven by money, right? It's, it builds the economy. You get tourism. But what do we lose in that process, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, but just in general, there are places that have changed since I'm, for those of you who don't know, I'm in North Carolina. And even being here, because Apple will be moving headquarters here. It'll be their first east of the Mississippi. Right. And we already have other tech stuff here. And I got into a conversation with a friend the other day who lives in San Diego, but he used to live in the Bay Area. And he said, yeah, it's probably going to start changing the dynamics when people show up. So,
yeah.
And this is my third move. This is my third move to the area, y'all. So I know about returning. My third move. And I've seen all the changes. So, yeah.
You really are you're on multiple sequels there.
I'm on, y'all might be on Godfather 1, but I'm definitely on Godfather 3 at this point. Although, by the way, that's
interesting choice there.
I don't have a horse, like, head in the bed. But I will say the Godfather, speaking of this, is actually an example where 1 and 2 were pretty good. If you saw it, that was probably one of those rare movies where, you know, I didn't even think 3 was that bad. Honestly, 3 wasn't terrible. It just wasn't 1.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, you know, Amanda, this makes me think.
Speaking of Italy.
Speaking of Italy, Amanda, this makes me think, you know, our dear guest, Clooney, over here. I think when it comes to sequels, one of the things that I've definitely spoken with people about quite a bit is the idea of repatriation for expats, the idea of returning from either wherever you come from, or I think with third culture kids, one of the things we see a lot is a family will return to a place that the parents were from, but the kids might not have extensive experience there. So, you know, if you're an American family living overseas, perhaps even your children were born in the US, but maybe you went overseas when they were quite young. And so that experience returning to whatever your home country is, and I think that experience is different for kids, for parents, for, you know, depends on how much time you spent there. But our dear Jerry here has recently repatriated, and that's quite the sequel. I would love to hear Jerry tell us about the sequel. Tell us about America Part 2.
Yeah.
Wasn't it like Star Troopers or something that literally had a part two? Sorry. I think it was Hot Shots? Sorry. Anyway, go ahead.
Ooh, Hot Shots. Wow, you're going back.
No, she's got the movie references.
I've got, you've got movies depth. And music.
Yeah.
Up to a certain point. Up to like 1998. But anyway.
Living the dream. Wow. Living the dream.
Yeah, I guess if I had to connect my personal repatriation to a movie, like, it's fitting because this country, the US of A, I would call it home. I call other places home. I have connected to other places, but I can't get away from that. This is where I grew up. This is my passport. I would call it home. And so if I had to connect it to a sequel, I would connect it to like Home Alone 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, however many they got, which were just disappointing reproductions of a fairly decent concept that connected with us all at one point, right? Like, it was a cute movie when Kevin got left at home the first time, but then it was just like, really? You left him at home again?
Really?
And really, he's going to do the same. Okay, we get it. He comes up with great plans to ward off the burglars. And then they just made a new one like this year with Kimmy Schmidt. And it's lackluster. That's where I'm feeling right now. Repatriation is
Home is Alone a typical 2 sequel. Left in New York.
I suppose it. Yeah, right? Right.
Wow.
And it's interesting the Donald Trump factor in both of those, because I think he was in Home Alone 2. I think there's been some impact of Donald Trump on this round of repatriation. It's an interesting connection. There's an interesting connection between those two.
I mean, sorry, I'm still stuck on the Home Alone 2. I was like, what movie would describe me repatriating to the States after high school? honestly, this is going to sound terrible, but there's a new one out. Scream. So.
Oh, my gosh.
Because, you know how you watch a horror movie? By the way, horror movies are perfect for sequels, right? So, like, you know, Leprechaun, Leprechaun 2, Leprechaun 5 in the Hood. I mean, literally, horror movies, Halloween, Freddy, you know, yeah. Friday the 13th. They have an unyielding amount of sequels, Final Destination. But like, the reason
and for our listeners who can't see right now, Chris and I are nodding as if we've seen some of those.
I was gonna say, I'm so lacking when it comes to
Leprechaun 7.
So lacking.
Okay, fine.
I'm way behind. No. And it, you know, here's the
reason.
You're
like behind. It came out in like the early
90s. That's how behind I am.
That's how behind.
Okay, fine. Okay.
No, I'm fine with using horror movies. I want to justify. It's not that I don't watch them because I'm scared. That's not it. It's that I watch most of my movies in flight. And I just, you can't watch a horror movie in flight. You can't do that.
Final Destination. No, definitely don't.
No,
you can,
never,
but you will traumatize.
Final Destination.
Yeah, but you traumatize anybody else.
You traumatize
else
the children in the
yeah, so okay. I am. So I just want, I want all two listeners to know. It's not that I'm scared. I'm not scared. I just can't watch them in flight. So
he
just so we're all clear.
Only watches movies in flight. Yeah.
Man,
yeah,
Nightmare on Elm Street, dude. Anyway, but I think it was for me as a young adult moving from somewhere where I thought I knew what was going on, but I really didn't, right? Because passport country, lived here, all this other stuff. And then I just became very aware that I had no idea culturally. I had no idea politically, you know, racial history. Like, I just had no idea when I think I was 17 and I was trying to make my way. And so when I think about some of those horror movies, I mean, half the reason you have a horror movie is because somebody's clueless, right? Like, there's got to be at least one clueless person. Because the movie, there's no movie if at least some people don't die. So like, you need to have, you know, until there's that one person where the light goes off and you go, hey, maybe this is what's happening, and they team up or whatever. And I think that's actually kind of my story, is that I started to find friends who had the international component to their lives. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of figured the stuff out together.
Yeah.
Oh, but I think that, I think that is so common. In fact, you know, when I speak to students at international schools who are planning on going to university, a fair chunk end up going from the international community, a fair chunk end up going to university in the US or the UK, or possibly in the country that, you know, they officially came from. But a common experience is that these students haven't actually had that much actual living time in these places, whether it's, you know, the US, the UK, Western Europe, or wherever their parents came from, but they have some degree of familiarity. And I think you described it so well with the horror movie metaphor, because that is the problem, is the familiarity. I mean, Western culture is so predominant in media. And so everyone thinks they've got some familiarity with, you know, these, with the United States, with major milestones that just get, you know, broadcast and all that stuff. And so that's the problem, is you arrive thinking, yeah, I got this. I've seen TV. I know what America's like. Mm-hmm. And then you get there and it's actually very different. And so one of the best pieces of advice, I don't think I even came up with it, I just stole it, is someone said, you know, even if you're going to a country you've got some familiarity with, even if it's a country you were living in part of your past or childhood, go to it new, pretending like it's a brand new country. Go to it and just do everything you can to pretend that it's a foreign country, because otherwise you're going to miss subtleties that you probably wouldn't miss. I mean, think about it. If you were moving to a country you knew little about or didn't speak the language, you'd be kind of primed to be incredibly observant, because you would just know, you're like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And you'd pick up a lot. Whereas you kind of turn some of that off when it's familiar. And I think, I mean, my experience is a little different, because I have an American passport. I'm American. but I wasn't born in the US. And I lived in the US just for a few years in elementary school when I was very little. And I remember going to the US as an adult at 18 and doing exactly that, thinking, I use an American accent. I got this. And I got to the US with all my, you know, I grew up around US military bases. Surely I got this. But A, the military is not the same as actual American culture. And B, just because I've seen it on TV does not actually mean that I know what I'm doing. And I think I absolutely remember being caught off guard and thinking and it's embarrassing because you're like, I thought I knew this. Do I know anything? And so I love the advice to always, you know, treat a place you're returning to as if it were brand new. And then on the flip side, I feel like I also had sort of a repatriation experience sort of with the UK. I was born in the UK, but I haven't actually, oh my word, I haven't lived in the UK in such an incredibly long time. And I transit through there. And so even when I visit, it's a very weird feeling because I feel like I'm connected to this place. I have a British passport. I was born here. My natural accent is English. So I switch that back on when I return to the UK. So I can even try to blend in a bit. But I still end up feeling so much changes that I have a snapshot of it in my head. And when I get back, you know, it's a bit different. And I would say I liken it because I've been trying to think about how I'm going to attach a movie to this because Amanda's done that so proficiently. I feel, for me, the UK is very much a Star Wars situation because I left and it was the original movies. And then I returned and there are new movies. And there's definitely some familiarity in the new episodes. But you can tell there's just a bit of it that you're like, ooh. This is, I mean, I thought I knew what it was in for, but, it's the same style, but you've gone in different directions. You've gone in different directions in the new set.
I'm caught with the Star Wars analogy. Are we? Because George Lucas messed us up here. So what we thought was the trilogy was actually the middle.
Oh man!
And then we had the one with Jar Jar Binks. So like, what you thought you knew, you didn't know. And then so we got those, the first three, and then we got the like where are you in the six?
I think even that is very accurate because basically everyone we thought we knew how to count. We thought we knew about sequential things. Right. And so we were like, all right, Star Wars. Yeah, there was the first one and the second one and the third one. And then new ones came out. And we thought, all right.
Yeah, but which first one do you mean? Which second one? Which third one?
Well, I mean by chronological order, by the actual release date. But then that's just it. George Lucas was like, ha, ha, ha. It's not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3. Right. And then it just keeps adding them. And
This feels like a great analogy because it's so confusing and complex. And like, I want to throw in a different layer there. There's the whole element of, see, I was alive when the first ones came out, as probably neither of you were, but I remember, and this is the thing, we all knew the story. Like we had the action figures, but I didn't see the movie until I was in my 20s. There was a re-release like 20 years later or something. We went to see them. I went on a date to see them at the on the big screen, and that was the first time I actually saw the story, but I knew the story. And so I don't know, maybe saw the sequels before I saw the movie or the originals, which feels like it, like there's a whole other layer of connection to this.
Yeah.
Global travel, global world, global living, all of that. That sometimes you see the sequel maybe as a TCK before you've actually seen the movie, even though you're familiar with the story, you've played with the action figures, you could name all the characters, but you've never actually seen the show.
Yeah. Mm. Ooh, that's so good, Jerry. So good.
So also deep.
Also, I want there to be TCK action figures now. Why are there not TCK action figures?
I'd pay big money for the Ruth Van Rieken doll.
Oh my gosh, that would be the collectors. That would be the if you had a Ruth Van Rieken in mint condition still in its packaging.
Oh my word.
My brain is also trying to wrap around, and it's hard. Do you call things a sequel where it's a reboot?
Difference between a sequel and a reboot. Because how many Spider-Man movies are there now? Something like 400 or something?
Yeah. Oh my god. You know where I was gonna take it. You said that. I was like keeping it in the 90s. So I wanted to tie in what both of you said. So you talked about, you know, when you should know what these places are, you have familiarity, and then you realize, I probably have some gaps in my learning. And, you know, Jerry talked about what you think you should know, but you realize you don't actually know. Mm-hmm. So a couple of years ago, they rebooted the great American classic show, 90210. Now, let me talk about 90210 for a second.
Tell us, Amanda.
If you have no idea how old I am, I feel like all these clues should give you an idea of when I grew up. When I was in middle and high school, 90210 was that show. Now, here's the thing. I lived in Africa. We did not get the show. So we had to do this thing where people would record on these big pieces of plastic called VHS tapes. The other day, my 13-year-old niece was doing a math assignment, and there was some word problem, and somehow the word, or no, it was English, VCR was in it. She goes, "What's a VCR?" And I found myself trying to explain what a VCR was to her. And I said, "Oh, this is so tragic." Anyway, and so my friends would record it over the summer, and then we would watch episodes throughout. And it's funny, when Chris was talking, I was thinking about what I thought as a TCK, like teenage American life was, and we were watching 90210, and here's the other show that's just been rebooted into a drama, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So that was what I thought.
Oh man, there's just reboots aplenty.
Right. That's what I thought living in the States as a teenager was going to be, right? And then I came for college, and it was like, kind of, sort of, not really. This is also a TV show. And so I wonder, too, if a lot of this is about expectations, right? When you see something and the expectations are not aligning with how you think a culture or a people or a place is going to be. Because I think that some of the misalignments that we, and the disappointments we go through, is because what we thought and we assumed, which we didn't actually really verify or check, don't align with actually the reality when we get into that place or into that position.
Yeah. And there's that connection between that first experience moving into a place that you've heard about, that you've known about, even maybe that you have a passport from, but have never really lived and experienced. And again, going back to the repatriation thing, like there's the expectation that has been set by a previous experience, right? Like, this is how it was when I was here before. This is what I remember. This is how I grew up. It's going to be like that again. It's going to be great. It's going to be wonderful. Or, like those expectations come from all over the place. And I have to throw this in side. This is just a side trail, and we'll come right back. I promise. But you mentioned 90210. if I gave you either one of you a phone call right now, and you didn't have my name in there, I would show up as Beverly Hills, because when we repatriated, we moved to Missouri, but we knew we were moving to California and had no idea where. We didn't know what city, anything. And we set up our phones. And when we set up the SIM card, it said, "Where do you live?" And I'm like, "Oh, California. We're going to live there. I don't know." They're like, "Okay, what's your zip code?" And I'm like, "I don't know any zip codes in California except 90210. And so I put in 90210, and now I'm from Beverly Hills.
Jerry, you're so swanky.
Oh, yeah.
You're so swanky, Jerry. Swanky.
That is the extent of my swanky right there. Like, that's as swanky as I get, is my fake phone number.
I want to flip this question, though. I do want to ask this question. Is there anywhere that you've been, either of you, where it wasn't great the first time, but the second and
the
third time,
better?
Though? Yeah. Because while you're marinating on that, I just want to say, truly, Mission Impossible with Tom Cruise. The first one sucked. But by the time they got to that second or third one with Philip Seymour Hoffman as the villain and kept going.
Agree, I think.
Do you remember? The first one was so complicated. No one understood what was happening. Mm-hmm. And then the second one, I really do know my films. John Woo was the director, and he's the guy who likes to release white doves into everything. Like Face Off.
Right.
Right. So he kind of dumbed it down. But by the time he got to the third one, I was like, Tom Cruise is in his bag here with Mission Impossible. So are there any places you've been to where you're just thinking, man, it wasn't that great the first time, but I'm glad I went the second and third.
Mm. Oh, goodness. That's hard.
Stunned silence.
I know.
Yeah, that was hard.
Stunned silence.
Like initially, I feel like there are elements. I'm trying to think of like from a broad experience perspective, like was the actual experience better? For me, I went to China twice. Like I lived there twice. And the second time there were elements that were much better. Like we were in a new city and a city that we grew to love and really become more connected to than any of the other cities that we lived in China. There was a 2-year gap in between those two experiences. But the first time was good. Like I wouldn't, it was like maybe Mission Impossible is a good example because it was confusing. It was complex. It was challenging. And as far as nobody understood what was going on. Yeah. That's a good way to describe our first 6 years in China. And then, you know, so coming back, there was a little bit of awareness. We understood things a little bit better. We understood the language a little more. The plot seemed a little bit better. So maybe, but I wouldn't go as far to say as the first one was not good. The first one was good also. It was just complex.
You know, I think that is a good summary of that experience. And I think the closest I've got is I'm going to have to shift it a little bit, and we're going to have to move from movies to TV series. There's a show called Alias, and it's got Jennifer Garner. Yeah, good old Alias. Love me some Alias. I feel like Alias is more of an analogy for kind of the repeat experiences I've had, in that there are absolutely places I've been to where the first time I went, it was like Alias. Like there was genuine struggles because technology was not where it is now. And so, you know, I remember going places where I had to like download and print maps or directions or use books. Yeah. I can remember, you know, when I was 18, like traveling around new cities in Europe, you got a book and this book listed like the 12
Lonely
hostels
Planet.
You could stay in. Yeah. But everyone had the Lonely Planet book. So all 12 hostels listed were always full. And that was just life. And I feel like there are places I've been to that have returned, and it's like watching Alias now, where some of the major plot lines that made that show work no longer work now because technologically, you know, there were episodes where they're like, they couldn't find someone. And, you know, if they could just, and now I'm like, well, we have Find Our Friends on my phone. Like I can find anyone. Or, I mean, just very simple stuff. They're like, we're just waiting for him to fax over the sequence to disarm the bomb. I'm like, well, now you just Google the instructions and
send
a text. Like you wouldn't have to find, you wouldn't be searching like the South Pacific.
The bomb's about to go off.
Honestly, searching for the fax machine could be the plot.
No, seriously, that would be the plot now is, oh my gosh, we need a fax machine or stuff like, you know, them talking on the phone and being like, well, describe the bomb to me. Is there a blue wire? Is there a red wire? Now you'd be like, oh, let me just take a picture with my phone and send it to you. You can look at it for yourself.
Let's Google it.
Or I'll just FaceTime. Yeah. We'll just look at me. I'm so old school. I'm like, I'll send a picture. You're like, or you can FaceTime me.
Or you can stream it.
That's how old school I am. I think for me that is a very common occurrence now, that there are places I return to, and some of that I kind of miss, like some of the wonder of I was talking with my buddy Walter, we were talking about some of our adventures that we're so proud of are because we managed to get into these places that, you know, we had to bribe immigration guards, and we had to, you know, traverse all these difficult things. And the fact that we found these places and these addresses mm-hmm. was just amazing. And now none of that is even exciting because everyone just mm-hmm. shows up with their phone, which, you know, has roaming plans now. And so right. you get walking directions to this, you know, everything has just right. become so easy that, yeah, the Alias series wouldn't work. And some places are kind of like that now where the special is gone because everything's become so accessible. And that is a weird thing to complain about because I think
right.
I love things being accessible. I want people to travel and experience different things, but I do think there's something to be said for having to work for it. Like there are definitely times every now and then. I think I went to Burma/Myanmar, depending on which map you read. And thankfully, I do remember there was still some elements of having to just figure it out. You know, this is just in the last couple of years, and I really enjoyed it. I got horribly lost. Mm-hmm. I got on the wrong train and left the city, and I was like, oh, I don't know where I am now. This is very exciting. And there's no cell phone signal, like there's nothing. And I wasn't even scared. I was kind of thrilled. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to find my way back. And that's so exciting. Or I live here now. And maybe that's exciting. So there's those elements where having to work for it, you know, it gives you something. But I want to pivot this and kind of ask you guys, as far as all this, because we've talked about, you know, different expectations. And I think that's so true. The expectation you have when you return to a place is going to shape a lot. But I think for me, some of the reasoning for those expectations is really, really powerful, because one of the things I see oftentimes in a family is a mismatch of expectations. So you get parents who their expectation is, oh my gosh, I can't wait to take my family home. And this is where I grew up, and this is familiar, and they're going to love it. And so they come, their expectations are framed by security and familiarity, and they want to show it off. And for the kids, you know, that might be a whole different set of expectations. For the kids, they're like, well, this isn't familiar to me. So, and that can cause a lot of strife, because you can have parents who are like, well, how are you not excited to be back in Germany? We're German. This is where we're from. The kids are like, I've been in Korea for so long that this is foreign. And even taking that advice, facing a place you have some familiarity with as if it were a foreign place, that can be, if you're a kid doing that, that can actually come off as pretty upsetting to parents who are like, this is not foreign. This is where you're from. And so I kind of want to throw to you guys, you know, what would the advice that you would give, as we've talked about things from a TCK perspective, but I think from a parent perspective, there's maybe different advice for kids and adults, and maybe different advice, you know, for all sorts of different levels there. But what sort of advice, you know, would you give as far as shaping your expectations? If you're going to have a sequel coming up, if you're returning to a place that you've got some familiarity with, you know, what's some good advice to help manage expectations healthily? Because I think it's okay to have some expectations. You know, I know for me, I love getting to return to places and show other people around. Like it's thrilling to me to show people around London. Like I think it's the greatest city. I love it. I love showing people around, and I get a sense of pride. And so my expectations, I think, you know, there I can get upset when I'm like, and look at this. And people are like, yeah. And I'm like, no. You're supposed to be excited. This is Westminster Abbey. How is your jaw not on the floor? Do you know how much history is here? And people are like, well, it's a little bit cold. And I saw Starbucks around the corner. And I'm like, no.
More importantly.
You will be amazed, and you will give this place the amazement that it is due. And so even that, you know, my expectations are clearly on display there. So yeah, what advice as far as placing your expectations?
I would like to bring it back to the 80s.
Well, why wouldn't we? Wake me up before you go.
I mean, I love Wham, but anyway. So, like, there are two groups of movies that I feel like you can pull such wisdom from for that question.
I'm so excited.
Groups of movies. Like, is there's, this a...
No, these are two different... They've had sequels.
Okay, sequels. So not like a genre, but an actual movie title.
No.
Okay, with sequels.
And
okay.
I am actually shocked, like the food analogies we did last time, that I was able to think of this. Indiana Jones.
Mm. How has it not been brought up yet?
I do not understand, actually, given legendary. What we're even talking about.
Seriously.
And so you got Indiana Jones, mm-hmm. Ghostbusters.
Oh. Look at, nuggets look of that. Wisdom. I feel like just saying those movie titles counts as a nugget of wisdom.
I like how there's the collective... Yes, from both of you.
And my brain just went all over the place because there's so many angles to both of those, like good and bad, great.
Right. Well, here's the thing with Chris's question, right? I think that here's the thing about expectations. When you're going back to a place, there's what you know, and then there's what you don't. I sound like Donald Rumsfeld. It's what you know and what you don't know, right? Anyway, sorry for those of you who don't get that joke. I was a political science major. I could talk politics all day long. But here's the thing. Like, the one thing you can expect is that there are going to be a ton of things you cannot expect.
Yeah.
But in your proverbial toolbox, you've got the tools to deal with it that you've picked up all around in the different places that you've been in, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if you think about Indiana Jones, he didn't necessarily know every exact obstacle that he was going to face. He just knew that there were some obstacles coming, right? And he prepared accordingly for that. I think it's the same way if you're coming back to a country. You know, I was just talking about this with my sister about something actually different, but we were talking about sort of how you prepare, and it's like, well, you're not going to know the exact kind of ghost you're fighting. You're not going to know the exact kind of Nazi you're looking for, but you do have to anticipate that there are going to be bumps on the road. Now, they may not be that extreme, but I think that if you can at least anticipate, hey, this is what's going to come, expect that it's going to come, and kind of keep yourself focused and think, okay, when it comes, I'll deal with it and not freak out about it. I think it'd be better for some people. But I think that when you come back, I know that for me, when I came back from, you know, when I came back from Doha, and admittedly, it was a shorter experience than my previous experience, I knew that the country had shifted and changed because we had a massive political change from when I left, you know, and I knew things were going to look different, and I had to sort of mentally prepare myself for, okay, what I've been seeing far away on the news, I'm now going to be in it. Now, I can be upset and frustrated or angry, or I can also say, hey, how can I grow in this experience? And how can I take what I've learned as a TCK and as an expat and apply it, even though it's my home country? And I think it's the same way, but I think too often we don't necessarily give ourselves enough grace when we're talking about our own home countries. Like, we have grace for everywhere else, especially if we've been moving around a lot, but we often don't have grace for how we can feel in our own zip code, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's good.
There's this element.
Ghostbusters. That's all
Ghostbusters.
I wanted to say.
Oh, Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters is a great example, because I feel like as a franchise, you know, as a series of movies that gone to multiple different places, and like that first, like, we all gathered around the concept, the idea in the first movie, and in that concept, in that experience, we got familiar with the characters, and we got familiar with there were certain anchors that really pulled us in. And then they went to different places. Either there was a cartoon, there was like, it blew up big. And then they had kind of the reboot a few years ago, in which they changed the Ghostbusters, and it didn't do as well. And then there was a big, the political climate came in, and even the critics got criticized because it was like, you're just criticizing this because these are women. And to some extent, like, maybe there's some validity in that, but also to some extent it's like, yeah, but they weren't the original Ghostbusters. Like, they and that's who we got comfortable with. And if their presence isn't there, then, and I'll say this, without intentionally spoiling, although if you haven't seen it by now, it's your own fault.
Been like the, 35 years.
No, the new one. The new one that came out.
Okay, right? I thought like, you were like, the original, I'm like, it's like 1985, it's okay.
All I'm going to say is, I've never, It's a
Titanic.
Spoiler,
it hits an iceberg.
It's not a direct spoiler. But you live with Google. If you wanted to know, you could go look it up. I've never been in a theater where in the middle of a movie, the entire audience started clapping. They broke out in applause in the middle of the theater. I've experienced it at the end of a movie, but not in the middle.
I watch movies in Africa. That happens all the time.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
I have been on planes where they clap when we land, like all of that. Yeah. Those are great experiences, but I just never experienced that. And certainly not in this country. But then I went to see the new Spider-Man also. Same thing happened. And it, like, I don't want to spoil, but it reiterates my point that we get comfortable with, the characters and the people and there are anchors in our first experience. And if those are missing, right? Like if you take Harrison Ford out of Indiana Jones and try, it doesn't matter how good the story is anymore. It can be better than the original story. Doesn't matter. Harrison Ford's not in it, right? Like where's the original Indiana?
Ooh.
Well, and not to get a little deep with that, but then if we're coming back to a country, the perception that differs between child and parent.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Parent saw original.
Yep.
Child saw post Harrison Ford, which actually is not true because I think he's actually in the newest. But do you know what I mean? If you think about a movie where like the Bourne Ultimatum, like that whole series, and then they did one where what's his name, Matt Damon wasn't in it. Mm-hmm. Like if you grew up seeing Matt Damon, you're like, who's this other dude who's in it? But if you never saw that dude, and I think sometimes that's what parents sometimes forget when they're going back to home countries, is that we never saw this. This is the first time. This is for you, it's the sequel. For us, the original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for the kid, the beauty can be in the story, right? The beauty is in the plot. It's not in the character that no longer is in the movie.
Yeah.
In the story. Yeah.
Well, I guess, so not to oversimplify things, but in some ways, what we're basically saying, and I think we've used this advice even on our podcast before, is you just have to be careful not to project. You have to realize that your history is not everyone's history. Your expectations are not everyone's expectations. And that, again, not to oversimplify, but now that I think about it, I can think of examples from my own life where that's happened. I mean, like I said, I went to the U.S. At 18, and I'd only really been in the U.S. for a couple of years when I was quite little. And so that was a very different experience. And I went to the U.S. at 18, and not only did I think, I got this, and then was like, oh, I don't got this. This is very different. But I can remember making local friends and them showing me around. And it was totally an example of expectation projection because I'd come from the UK, which is a very old place. This happened to be Spokane, Washington, which is a very new place. Spokane is new in comparison. And so the things that amazed me, my friends thought were ridiculous. Like the roads were the most amazing thing to me because they were all in a grid. Like the roads were all straight and everything was squares. It was just... all the roads were straight. Everything was on a grid. It was so planned out and so right angled and perfect. And to me, that was just, it blew my mind. And they could not understand it. They were like, well, of course the roads are squares. What else would they be? I was like, oh, you don't understand. Where I go in the UK, our roads are based on old Roman roads. Like they squiggle all over the place. There's no straight shot from A to B because way back in the day, A to B would have had a well and a mound and some grumpy old crone that would throw rocks at you. And so you squiggled the path around that tree and across that. So, even the way people give directions is different. In the US, it's far more common to be like, oh, head north on I-70. And then you can't do that in the UK because roads are squiggly. So you give waypoints. In the UK, you said, oh, you head toward Harwich and then you head toward blah, blah, blah. Anyway. And so to me, these straight roads were absolutely amazing that, I was blown away. And friends in Spokane were like, well, that is the most ridiculous thing to be excited about. But I saw the flip side of that. I brought a friend of mine that I made in Spokane over to the UK with me when I later returned. And stuff that I took for granted, he just thought was amazing. I remember driving down or to get home, we were driving through my village, and he was just bewildered at how close the road was to the buildings. In fact, he opened the car window and stuck his arm out. He's like, I can touch the stones on the, I was like, well, please don't, like, that's a pavement. You will knock someone over. Like, someone is trying to walk in that space. Do not put your arm out. Whereas, you know, what he's used to is a ton of space. So little things I took for granted amazed him. Little things, you know, that he took for granted amazed me. So it is, it's, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of importance in not projecting your own history and expectations mm-hmm. around and realizing that they're going to be different. So maybe as far as, you know, if you're a parent, realize that your kid's return to your home might look a little different. If you're a kid, mm-hmm. realize that stuff may be way more sentimental for your parents, even if it isn't for you. And if you're going off to college somewhere that you might have some familiarity with, it's probably not going to meet your expectations. You know, there's, man, don't project.
Yeah, and there's a language shift in there from, because it's so easy when you see a movie or when you experience life, for me to say for you, oh my gosh, you're going to love this. You are going to love this, but you're going to love this food. You're going to love this place. You're going to love these people. You're going to love this town or this country or this experience. And there's no way to predict that, right? You can say, I love this. Like, this was my experience. I love this food. I love this place. I love these people.
That's a good language.
And because I love it, I want you to experience it, but let me let you have your own story, right? Like, let's let the plot be the plot for you and not pushing my plot onto your storyline.
Unless you're insecure, and then by all means, just tell them, listen, I love this. And if you don't love it, we're not friends anymore. So there's that.
Yeah.
You can always go that route. It's just not.
That's a great point. And I feel like all of our listeners are going to be really changed by that. You guys are going to love this. What Chris just said, it's going to change your life.
It's going to change your life. You will love this if you want us to stay friends.
God. I had a guy, I love steak, and I had steak with a friend one time, and I just wanted some A1 on my steak, which I like A1 on my steak. He got mad. Like, he was, because he was like, no, the steak is the steak, man. Like, the steak, there's so many, like, what you want is the natural juices and the, and like, a good steak doesn't need any steak sauce. And I felt bad. I'm like, but I just really like A1. It's tangy. It gets you here and it gets you right here. And it was like a, that was the end of that relationship, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what happens. Jerry, I want you to know, you are welcome to put whatever you want on a steak if we have a steak together.
Let me have my own plot, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to project that onto you, but so help me. If you make your tea and put the milk in first, we're done. We're done. there are standards, Jerry. You can have freedom. You can have freedom with steaks, but you don't mess
my
with
story?
Tea. Milk in first? I think not.
Chris, I need to speak my story here. my story, there are no characters. There are no milky tea characters in my story.
Oh my God.
None of the tea characters have milk in them.
Jerry, and I'm in your story. I'm right here. I'm literally the co-host.
That's great.
Literally the co-host.
I don't know where the metaphor breaks down. I'm not drinking you.
I'll allow it. Amanda, tell me you're not a milk and first. Tell me you're not a milk and first tea drinker.
No.
Amanda, tell me you're no milk at all.
I'm really no milk, actually.
Okay. All right. Good.
This podcast is over.
Over.
And yet it just got better. We're gonna let you have your story, Chris. You have your plot, and it's a milky tea.
It's a milky tea plot. Yeah. What I think is really funny is, for as conflict averse as I am, and I normally do, I mean, if you remember from our last episode,
I can see it in your eyes.
I can defend anyone, and yet it comes to tea, and I am ready to lay down.
That's the hill you will not
exactly
let go. That's the one you'll die on.
Yeah, I will die on that hill. Right. I mean, I will smooth over all other differences and look at all perspectives. But T,
man, Oh man, y'all are hilarious. I'm not sure what's happening, but I am.
Listen, I think it's a good point to say we've done well here. Let's
we stayed on topic.
We stayed relatively on topic.
And stomped all over the topic. Like we went
all over the topic.
We went all over the place. Yeah.
There was advice, there was projection, there was expectation.
There were movies, there was TV shows.
Wisdom dropping. I mean, nuggets strewn aplenty.
Yeah. I do have one more nugget to kind of tie this all in before we leave. Ties us all together. Because my goal is to drop as many movies as I could.
Well done.
So, you know what? And I mean, I've got quite a few that are still in. I didn't even talk about Die Hard people. Like, that's the amazing
thing.
That's true. That was in
the pre-production meeting.
I didn't even mention my love of Die Hard. But what I was going to say.
Yes.
That with all these moves, you are going to deal with challenges and you're going to deal with struggles. And there's a lot of gray and messy, and that's just life. And it can be wonderful and amazing, but you don't want to let it knock you down. And if you've ever seen any one of the six Rockies and Creed 1 or 2, Jerry is nodding yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, I saw the first one, but I feel like I've seen them all.
But you've seen the story, which means you know and recognize mm-hmm. when certain things and emotions bubble up, mm-hmm. you know exactly what to do because you've been there before,
right.
Probably 6 times.
Yep.
And with 2 additions and a third on the way.
Don't let it knock you down.
Don't let it knock you down.
Right. Punch it in the face.
Oh, I mean, it was either going to be Rocky or Rambo, so let's go with Rocky because Rambo's a little too much. That was such good closure.
That was such good closure because we talked about that with resilience. Especially, and I love what you said about you can tell when those emotions are bubbling up, and I think that's the thing about when you're in a new situation, and sometimes the sequels, you're in new situations that you didn't even know were new situations. You get to a place and you think, oh, I got this. I remember they remodeled the transit area at Heathrow. And it threw me for a loop because I could navigate a transfer at Heathrow in my sleep. And then they did renovations and I didn't know I was in a new adventure. And suddenly I had to actually wake up. I was sort of sleep zombieing through, you know, my flight change. And it was like, oh, wait, I don't know where I am. What's happening? And that happens. Sometimes your adventure, you don't even know but you can tell when those things are bubbling up and knowing that they're coming and preparing for them. That's such good advice to close us on. I would say, Amanda, so you dropped some wisdom milk in this finely brewed cup of tea and you did it last as it should be. You didn't throw that milk in first. You saved that for the end. And now we can stir it up, sit back and sip. There we have it.
Jerry says, Tuesday.
Get some coffee.
Oh my gosh. This has been fun, y'all.
It's been a beautiful thing.
To actually see the concept work in the show. let's just say expectations were exceeded, they were high. But they were exceeded.
Yeah, good catch.
I think Amanda just said that this was a successful sequel, is what I'm hearing.
There you go.
Maybe better than the original.
Maybe better than the first.
Oh,
so,
man.
I don't know.
We'll let our listener decide.
I was going to say, that's what the people need to do. They need to go listen to the first episode.
Exactly.
Prep themselves for... Although we're saying this at the end, right? So they probably have already listened to the original.
Still, doesn't matter. Yeah. They can listen to them out of order. Sometimes you do that with movies. Sometimes you watch the...
Right. Totally. You watch Leprechaun 5, Back in the Hood. Don't do that in flight. Right?
Don't do that in flight.
Jerry's like, you're going to go out and watch this. I promise you.
I'm going to at least YouTube it.
I wouldn't pay for it. No, definitely not.
I just mean I'm gonna watch a clip. I'm gonna watch.
You're not gonna watch the entire.
And then we'll compare how much of the movie I understand from that 3-minute clip versus how much you understand watching all 8 of them.
It'll be the same, guaranteed.
Thank you, Amanda. This was good.
Oh.
Thank you.
Amanda, thank you so much for joining us. It's been such a blast. And thanks, dear listener, for coming along on this sequel-ridden adventure.
Thank you. And like I said, I always enjoy listening to you guys. And so it is my pleasure to be here. And, you know, if anyone wants to find me, Global Chatter Podcast, because I will plug my podcast.
Go listen to it right now.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Absolutely. You've made it through this. Reward yourself with some Global Chatter.
Right.
Global Chatter.
Oh, thanks so much, dear listeners. We'll see you next time.
We won't, actually. You'll hear us.
But we won't see you.
That just sounds weird, though. Yeah, see you next time.
I thought I'd close the episode with a deception. That's what I thought I would do.